Guys, the basic architecture of the web as we know it is quite simple, and you might argue it's actually elegant and beautiful if you actually look at it at its core. But unfortunately, we need as we add more features to both the web as it's a client, the browser mainly, and the web server, which are the feeder, if you will, of the content, complexity arises, problems arise as a result. One problem that you might be familiar with is you visit a web page and you get certain layout, and after a fraction of a second, that layout started to kind of jiggle and shift, and the reason. If you're a front-end developer, you have the answer. You know why, right? It says, hey, I loaded the HTML first. I made a request. I got the first thing that the server responded to me with is the HTML, and I rendered whatever I can render, right? So the text will show up, right? Paragraphs, if there is like dev element, they will show up, but we're still waiting for a lot of other things. The browser sometimes start to be smart and not to load things that depends on certain things, but sometimes you see it. So the dependencies here, like CSS files, JavaScript, if you have code that shifts your layout around. And as a result, once you get the HTML, all these references are then turned around and requested on the same connection that you requested the HTML on, or, right, it depends on the protocol, HTTP 1 or 2, multiple connections can be open and all these requests are sent at the same time. Okay. And HTTP 1, you have a limit of 6 connections. I think Chrome created this arbitrary limit, and you can only send 6 requests at a time, and just you have to wait. Each connection has a request. In HTTP 2, we basically have no limit. I believe there is an artificial 200 limits per connection, right, for each stream. But that's enough. That's more than enough, right? So you can use this and send it in parallel, regardless. But the question here is, yeah, you have 7 images and you have 5 CSS files and 3 JavaScript files, right? And you made all these requests at the same time. And even if you try to be smart, they said, okay, I'm going to send the JavaScript first because I need them first. And I'm going to send the CSS in the second because I need those. And the images are not important. So I'm going to add them, request them at the end. The way you request doesn't matter, right? Because the end of the day, these requests technically have no priority or anything like that. They will all, assuming you didn't actually physically delay them, but you just change the order of what the request you sent, all of these requests will be out of the server. And the server will respond as fast as possible to any of them. So if the images were happened to be cached by a front-end content manager and content delivery network or a reverse proxy of some sort, those images will be served first. And the CSS will be delayed. Right? It's just whatever is available, just serve it. That's how it works today. And the problem here is because we don't have this guarantee, then we have this the dependency tree is broken in our page, and the experience of the user is hindered. So that's one use case, right? So like where you can actually. There's a problem where we want to set some sort of priority, right, and the request, which doesn't exist today. You might argue that you can fictitiously create this priority by literally just delaying sending those requests. Don't send the images. The images are not as important as the JavaScript files or CSS, right? Just don't send them, right? Well, technically, you don't have that. The browser does, but not you as a front-end developer. But if you're building an app, you get my point, right? Another control you have, is don't build so many files. And a lot of I follow this channel, the Chrome Developers channel. And they have good suggestions. I don't write front-end code, but as often, but it's very nice the depth of knowledge they go into discussing how the browser works and what the browser decides to load first, you know, based on like what synchronous requests are blocking, what others are not. Like the browser does so much complex things to give the user the best user experience effectively. And but yes, though some of these requirements, some of these tips, they say use inline CSS instead of a CSS file. Why? Because the inline CSS will arrive with your HTML file, and because it will arrive with your HTML file, based on the what you see, what you get principle, the browser has it. And it doesn't have to turn around and make a request to fetch that resource. Right? Same thing with JavaScript. With JavaScript, I think it's a bad idea to use inline JavaScripts. Right? Just because, I mean, the reason I don't like the inline script and I try to disable them with the content security policy is because I want to get rid of cross-site scripting, because that's one of the most nastiest, security attack, right? And most of these are because of inline scripts, right? The script tag, script, and then you close script tag, right? So what you do is you host your JavaScript files on a specific domain that is trusted, and your page instructed not to load any JavaScript file from anywhere except this domain, which is your domain. And just because you have that, that is an additional layer of security, so that nobody can just do like in an input text, like inject a JavaScript in your code, in your page, and then act on your behalf effectively. That's just one of the nastiest thing, right? But I understand sometimes it's not always possible to disable this, because you need certain, there is always a reason, right? I try not to tell people what's best anymore, because I came to the comfort with myself that I don't know everything. Whatever I say could possibly be wrong. So telling people that, you should always do this and not never do this, that's BS. Because, like, what do you know? You are an outsider. You are an armchair architect, literally just spewing stuff on people. You don't know their use case. You don't know anything about how many years they've been working on this code. You don't know anything. So you can't just tell people, drop everything, this is the way to go. So I believe, always believe, that there is a special use case for everything, right? And understanding the risks is what matters. I know we're going all over the place. There is a point of this backend engineering show, actually. We're going to get to it. There's an RFC I want to discuss. We can't always solve the problem of priority responses, And here's another problem. Even if you somehow hard-coded the responses on your servers, like you own the web server, you own the backend, and you always going to configure your backend to respond with CSS, JavaScript, and then images, and then other unimportant files, like whatever, and guys, you can generalize this. You can go into APIs. Their APIs also can have priorities. Like, this API is more important than this API, so please, if I send you two requests, respond with this first before this, if you can. Right, if applicable. I think it's just generalized. I'm giving the HTML JavaScript, CSS, because it's a kind of common example, right? So you can configure your backend to respond with whatever priority you feel best, right? Will that work? Sure. It will, but it's kind of nasty to code, right? I think. Like, it's like, what if you want to spin up multiple servers and like having special logic? What could go wrong, right? So that's one problem. I'm not worried much about that. But the second problem is, what about intermediaries, right? Things that are in the middle. What if there's a CDN between you, right, and the client and the backend? And if you have a CDN, the CDN is a layer 7 TLS terminator, always, you know, reverse proxy. That means it reads all the requests, it terminates all the requests, reads them, decrypt them, understand them, serve the client the certificate, and then turns around and then make this request on another connection to the actual backend if it doesn't have the answer cached. Even if you or backend obeyed that priority that you kind of hard coded in your app, right? The CDN or the reverse proxies will have no clue about them. If you receive all the responses, if you respond to the reverse proxies, the reverse proxy will follow whatever is applicable for it, right? So if there is like a delay in the first request, first response for some reason, like a segment was lost and it was to retransmit it, but the rest of them, of the request responses went normally, then it will say, hey, whatever is available for me, I will respond with this. Maybe, right? Maybe there is some sort of memory contention, and maybe there is a certain logic that the responses are being asserted. Maybe the reverse proxy will decide, oh, this is the first request, so I must serve this request first. And this request maybe happened to be the image. And no, you don't want to serve the image first. I want to serve the CSS. Right? But you can't control any of that. So people from Cloudflare and Fastly came together and built a very interesting let's just talk through this screen. Yeah. So this is it, an RFC. So this was designed actually very fresh. You know, it's June 2022. It's like literally this month has been proposed the standard, I think, right? And it was basically designed by Lucas Perdue. He's from Cloudflare, and he's also, I think, in the board of the HTTP3 and Quick and Mask and so many other stuff, right? And Oko, Kazuo Oko, he's from Fastly. And yeah, those are two badasses engineers, you know. They're so, you know, I like following them and just learning so much from the depth of the, you know, they are into the trenches building this stuff. You know, building something like this is, and taking care of the proxies and, you know, the connect method. What if I am in a proxy, not the reverse proxy, an actual proxy? What does that mean? Taking care of all of this stuff, right? So this is basically the RFC. And I'm not going to go through it, obviously, right? But kind of summarize, read the abstract, and then talk through it with you guys a little bit. So this is a request for comment 9218. Lucas Perdue and Oko from Fastly, June 2022, fresh again. It's named Extensible Prioritization Scheme for HTTP. I butchered the heck out of that. Extensible Prioritization Scheme for HTTP. Okay. So this is basically introducing a new header, HTTP header, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. I skimmed through the RFC, read the main points, and that's what I basically got. And it is a complex one, in my opinion, to implement, right? This document describes a scheme that allows an HTTP client to communicate its preferences for how the upstream server prioritizes responses to its request. So the client here, you know, tells the server, hey, I want this request to be served before this, not in the order they are essentially received. Why? Because the order you sent them, the request, are not guaranteed to be received in that order to begin with. There's this thing that is called TCP head of line blocking. There is packets that get lost, you know, and I'm talking about all, you know, all the protocols. You might say, HTTP 3 fixed the TCP head of line blocking. Yeah, it did, but that doesn't mean it uses UDP, so UDP still can be lost and retransmitted. So one stream, one request, even if you send request one before request two might arrive to the server before request one. What do I mean by arrive? You know, we really don't talk in much technical details as we should as software engineer. If I sent a request that is get path, let's say just slash app, and then http://11. The fact that I sent that, and I sent a bunch of headers, and then body, there's no body in Git, I keep forgetting that, just a bunch of stuff. This string of things is then transmitted into, from the layer 7, like the application layer, into layer 4. And based on that, based on the maximum transmission unit of your network, it will be broken down into maximum segment sizes, so into small segments based on that size. That size is around 1400 bytes, give or take, no? And it could be larger in cloud providers, you know, internal networks. So this 1400 bytes, so your string, that request, it will be broken into 1400 segments, and the last one will be obviously smaller based on whatever remains. So these segments are ordered, labeled, sequenced, you know, and then sent, you know, and they are placed in IP packets, you know, and these IP packets are sent through the internet, destined to the destination IP address from you as the source IP address as a client. And as they travel, the router look at these IP packets and try the best effort to take it to the shortest path, the best path. You know, there is no discrimination for any IP packet. All IP packets are treated, okay, I'm going to give you the fastest, best, fast. And if that's what net neutrality, right, tries to kind of preserve here, right? It's like, hey, keep the net neutral as much as possible. It's like, I don't want routers start preferring certain IP packets over others, right? But that's a different story. So that all these IP packets, like, I'm going to give you the shortest path. And if an IP packet number one, which carries your first segment, again, four or five or seven segments belonging to one request. If one IP packet might take one route, the route that can get congested meanwhile, and the second IP packet might take a different route, right? But they will eventually arrive out of order. The TCP layer will order it, and the segments will be arrived. Sometimes it will get lost. Retransmission happens. Congestion happens. Flow control. I talk about all of this in my network course. Shameless plug, network.husseinnasser.com. Get yourself a discount coupon and enjoy that course. It's pretty good, I think. So if that is what we mean by a request getting delivered, all these segments arrive, acknowledged, you know, by the server, and then once these segments arrived, they are we go from down to up, because on the client side, from we went from layer 7 down to the layer 4 and the wires, and now we go opposite from layer 4 to layer 7. Layer 7 doesn't know about any segments. It just needs the data back. So we'll assemble. Obviously, TLS and decryption happens at the same time here. Decrypt the content and deliver the app. And only when I get that, the event on request on your Node.js or on your any application you want will get fired. Only if those 4 or 5 segments are arrived and they are on order. So that's what it means to request. So request, that's what it means. Just delivering a request is not some, hey, just sent a request, get it, yay. There is some stuff that's happening behind the scene, and we really need to understand what is happening, right? And talk about it. So based on that, once you understand how it works, of course requests can be delayed. Like one request can be arrived before the rest of them. And it depends if it's in the same TCP connection, if it's in the multiple TCP connections, right? And if it's HTTP2, right? HTTP2 suffers from TCP head of line blocking. HTTP3, right? Doesn't have that, you know, because everything is like ordered at the stream level. But I don't want to go into that either. But yeah, we have this problem. So yeah, so the client can define the priorities here and also allows the server to hint to a downstream intermediary how its responses should be prioritized when they are forwarded. So it's not just a client request header field, it's also a response header field, as far as I from this abstract. I like reading abstracts because it usually explains everything, but sometimes leave me with more questions, right? Like here, this document defines the priority header field for communicating the initial priority in an HTTP version independent manner. That is interesting. This means that regardless of the protocol, this priority is supported. And man, I had a big question about that. But then they said, as well as HTTP2 and HTTP3 frames for reprioritizing responses. So HTTP3 and HTTP2 makes perfect sense, because as a client, I'm going to use a single TCP connection for HTTP2, and I'm going to use a single quick connection for HTTP3, and I'm going to stream, you know, all my requests in single, multiplex them into a single connection, and they are different stream. Or if each request lives in a different stream, so they're going to be streamed into this connection. So the server has context for all these requests belong to the same client, because they all kind of, what is this? You know, it's like if it's like there is a lot of, you know, sticks together. No, in Arabic we call it hufna, but I don't know what's in English. It's like a group of things, you know, just like a stack of sticks. You know, it's like they are together, you know? So there's context both in HTTP3 and HTTP2. Now, how do you do this with HTTP1? That doesn't make any sense, right? You might say, Hussein, why? Because in HTTP1, we don't support multiple requests, you know, multiplexing requests into a single connection. We stopped doing that, right? Because it's nasty. That's the best way to put it. It's very nasty to do, you know? So like pipelining and all this, it's just nasty. So what people do is we establish multiple TCP connection and we kind of demultiplex, if you will. You know, so I have all these requests, and I just send them into multiple TCP connections. And so you open multiple connections to the same server as the same client. But there is no linkage between this connection. And HTTP being stateless saves us here, right? Because it doesn't matter. It's like, hey, yeah, there is no context. Who cares? Just send me that stuff. Send me information with every request so I can link those, right? And that's what they actually rely on. When I scrolled all the way, let's go. There is exactly a paragraph addressing my concerns. See, this is what I'm talking about. And I'm pretty sure there are other stuff, you know, that I never thought of and they did, you know. But this is it. Let's read through this and then end the podcast. How about that? HTTP 1X backends. It is common for content delivery network infrastructure to support different HTTP versions on the front end and the back end, right? It makes sense, right? Because CDNs like Cloudflare or Fastly, they want the front end to be as fast as possible, you know, let's support HTTP 3 or HTTP 2. But the back end, they cannot control because the back end is you as a back end engineer, right? You might support HTTP 1 or 2 or just one, right? It's whatever version you support, right? They can't force you to upgrade. So they have to, right, support multiple versions. So they are a server, the CDN that is, they are a server for HTTP 3 and HTTP 2 on the front end, and they can be a client of HTTP 1 to your backend, that is HTTP 1 on the backend. So what do they do in this case? Let's read. For instance, the client-facing edge, right? Here, the edge means the CDN edge, right side, might support HTTP 2 and HTTP 3 while communication to backend server is done using HTTP 1. So that's just an example. It doesn't have to be HTTP 1, no, but it could be, right? So unlike connection coalescing, I don't know what that means, to be honest, right? Need to read more about it. The CDN will demux, will demultiplex effectively, request into discrete connections. Like this is what when I talked about multipath TCP, right? The idea of demultiplexing is being very popular right now. So you demultiplex stuff. So you have one pipe and it becomes multiple pipes, you know? So this is the same thing. You have one HTTP 3 connection or one HTTP 2 connection, right, with multiple requests, but then demuxes, right? Am I doing this right? Demuxes into multiple TCP connection because the problem we mentioned with HTTP 1, right, has to be multiple connections. Response multiplexing in single connection is not supported by HTTP 1 or older. We talked about that, right? Response multiplexing. Doesn't that also apply to request multiplexing? I would, yes. It's not just response. You can't even request multiplexing is not supported because of the pipelining problem, right? Which we, I think, no longer support, right? Yeah, I would guess this is both response and request. I would make that suggestion or correction. Or correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. So there is not a fairness problem, right? However, backend servers may still use client headers for request scheduling. So how? So if I have multiple HTTP connections, how do I link them to each other so that they belong to the same client, right? So here it comes. Backend servers should only schedule based on client priority information where that information can be scoped to individual end clients, right? So you should really schedule because you're going to have priorities from different clients. What is a client here? All these requests are coming from different clients as you can think of it as the IP address, the originating IP address. Although that's not necessarily a good idea because the CDN might use a different IP address, right? So to represent multiple clients, so that's not a good idea. But that's what it is. Authentication and other session information might provide this linkability. So this is where they kind of hit it on the head here. So if you want to make sense of these multiple connections and kind of prioritize multiple requests across multiple HTTP 1.1, then use something on the back end. You are responsible to link them. How? As a backend engineer, my guess here, this will be implemented as the HTTP server responsibility. I shouldn't be doing anything. Now, how would the backend engineer or the library or the web server, you know, daemon, if you will, would know how, what is a session or was an authorization or the cookie? How does I can't trust anything? This seems to me like over engineering, in my opinion. Right? This section, I'm not suggesting anything, but we're just talking here, right? It's just obviously. I could be wrong with anything I say, but I think this is a little bit yikesy. It's just very hard to implement. You know, it's just like how? To me, yeah, it could be implemented, but it seems like very complicated and over-engineering. If it was me, I was just like, hey, no support for priorities for HTTP 1.1. If you want priorities, use HTTP 2 or 3, and you have to use it all the way. But I understand, obviously, they talked about all of this. This may have been there for years, right? So, not criticizing or anything like that. So, they, meaning Locus here specifically, and Cloudflare and Fastly, they talked this through in details. They're way smarter than me, obviously. And they thought about all these ideas and they said, okay, maybe we can't just support half a protocol. You know, it's just, if there's a priority, how do you control all the intermediary? It's just very interesting. And what I would end it here, guys. I would end this show by saying that I absolutely enjoy reading these RFCs because, first of all, it addresses problems that I didn't know even existed, you know, like this. I never had this problem. You know, it's like having to prioritize, you know, requests, right? Well, that's a good idea if you think about it, right? Because if I would prioritize something, I would just delay it, which is not great for performance, right? You would synchronously delay something. You would send a request and then make it dependent on each other. If you want two requests to be dependent of each other, you know, you would send the first request and you wait. Don't send the second one. Once you get a response, send the second one. But that is so slow. Now come think about it, right? This RFC opened my eye. And how did I know about it? LinkedIn, randomly. I believe, if I'm mistaken, Daniel Stamberg, the creator of Curl, liked the RFC from Lucas, and I followed Lucas, and then in LinkedIn, and I saw this. I was like, oh, this is really interesting stuff. Yeah, it's just a lot of you ask me, guys, like, how do you keep, you know, increasing your knowledge? How to learn? What books to read? To be honest with you, I don't read books anymore. It's like, yeah, if I want to learn like Linux, I buy the Linux book, Bible, for example, and I go through it, you know, from time to time. It's like to know, I don't know how to partition a drive or what is a swap, you know, things like that. But for things like that, if you want to increase your knowledge, I love reading RFCs, man. I just absolutely love it because books go out of date. It's like what you're going to learn books. Like this is cutting edge stuff that what we're discussing right here. That these are problems that maybe have been discussed before. I never heard about them before, but this is, to me, this is fresh. This is new. This is now, right? And I just love reading the RFCs. And to be honest, it was reading the RFCs was not easy. No, in the beginning, when I started doing this like 6-7 years ago, actually making content and trying to be better, you know, as a better software engineer, reading the RFCs was so difficult because I didn't understand anything. You know, and a lot of you might have the same problems. Like reading FC is so complex because there is an internal assumption that you know stuff. And if you don't, like they say, scheduling the connect method. If you don't know what a connect method is, right, you'll be get lost. But that's what it, where, you know, collateral knowledge comes into the equation. I spent a lot of years, you know, just stumbling up, reading something and then hitting a wall. So, oh, what is this? And then go into a, like a depth first algorithm. Because go learn and then go back to the thing I wanted to learn. And then hit another thing and go learn that and then come back. So it's just like, now I have a little bit of a knowledge, you know, but I think it's still a little bit shallow. I try to dig as deep as possible. But that, I really suggest RFCs is great knowledge, you know, going back and just read the original HTTP RFC, the 1996 one. Just so beautiful, you know, how people, how what are the original problems they try to solve and how everything changes now. Yeah, guys, I'm going to leave it at that. It was a little bit of a long show, but it's a podcast. So, yeah. Talk to you later.